really engineered the whole studio to be close to the audience. So it's not like many shows, like where you're in a huge theater and the host is, you know, 50 feet away and kind of ignores them, you know, has the band play loud, you know, in the break. So they don't have to talk to them. We're in the audience interacting, and it brings all kinds of, you know, as you said, organic interaction that really turns out to be fun. And since our whole emphasis is on reality and the people at home and just kind of humanity, it's a way that you can, you know, get into that while all these people are at home watching and can't have that interaction. They can relate to the people right there, sitting there, you know, that are regular people, and they're interacting with our hosts and different celebrities.
That's Michael Gelman, executive producer of Live with Kelly and Mark, the number one morning talk show in America. It's shot out of New York City. Before we get to that, I've been really busy on tour with my our Broadway show, Permission to Speak. Had great shows in New Jersey at the Pollock Theater, and then in Chicago at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts. December 29th, going to be in Orlando at the Dr. Phillips Center for the Performing Arts. These are fancy schmancy places, people. I'm really stepping up my game. So we're doing two shows. So if you're in the Orlando area, come on out. We'd love to see you there. And February 2nd in Sellersville, Pennsylvania at the Sellersville Theater. And March 9th, my home turf in Rhode Island, the United Theater. The show's been really great. I've been getting these amazing stories, you know, about a guy who bought a bowling alley for $2, and the strangest thing that he's seen on it with two people humping, two Northwestern grads, literally graduate students, humping on the table in the bowling alley. There you go. I mean, okay, I get turned on bowling. You know, the shape of the pins, you could argue looks like the shape of a woman, but I don't know if I ever get that horny. But the stories have been incredible, and love you guys to check it out if I'm coming to your area. Just had a great conversation with Michael Gelman, but I wanted to catch up a little bit on what I've been up to. Just got a tree for Christmas, a perfect tree, almost too perfect. We got a tree farm, but they'd already cut them down. So I didn't understand what the point of the farm part was, because we couldn't go out, pick them and cut them down. So it kind of didn't feel all that special. I just walked up and there was some guy's name looked like it would either be Daryl or Daryl, and lived in the woods, was the guy who picked the tree and might have been had a record of some kind. Anyway, so we got the tree. Then we watched, we decorated the tree, and then we watched A Christmas Story, which is great. And I'm still to this day trying to figure out how they did the gag with the kid's tongue stuck to the pole. If you have any thoughts on that, hit me up on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter, because I'd love to hear your thoughts. But I'm thinking they put a fake tongue in his mouth and he bit on that and then somehow he moved it around. I don't know. Or maybe he just stuck it to the pole and it wasn't cold and he had to just make it look like it was stuck. I think about these things a lot. You can see that even though I don't have a lot of time on my hands, I have too much time on my hands. Don't know what I'm getting my wife for Christmas. Don't know what I'm getting my dog for Christmas. I know I'm getting my dog nothing, because my dog is, finds me annoying. And I think I've mentioned this, and if I have, I'm sorry, but she walks into another room when I walk into the room. She gives me a dirty look and just walks into the other room. I know that the thing that I overheard a conversation, I'm not making this up. This guy must be about, I don't know, early 20s, saying, yeah, one day, so me and my dad were in Vegas and we're doing this stripper. Now, there's so many things wrong with that statement, not the least of which is it's not me and my dad. It's my dad and I. And, you know, if you don't have your grammar right, what do we have, people? I'll tell you what we have. We have a society that's falling apart. It's my dad and I. We're doing a stripper. Can we get it right? All right, listen, enjoy Michael Gelman. It's a really cool conversation with him about how he's been producing this show for years. He holds the Guinness Book of World Records for the most shows produced by one producer of a television show. And the show's gone through a lot of iterations. And it's a kind of cool behind-the-scenes look, behind-the-curtain kind of thing of you know, doing a major talk show that everybody enjoys. So enjoy that and hope to see you guys December 29th in Orlando at the Dr. Phillips Center, or in Sellersville, Pennsylvania, February 2nd. March 9th, United Theater, my show Permission to Speak. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. My guest this week, executive producer of Live with Kelly and Mark, Michael Gelman. He also takes roles on television as well. You've seen him on the show a lot. And he is the Guinness Book of World Record holder for the most morning talk show episodes produced by the same producer. Live's the number one entertainment talk show on television. Michael, it's great to have you on the show.
Good to talk to you, Paul.
So you have two holiday shows coming up on December 15th and December 22nd. They look really fun. I love the first one on the 15th is a sweater party, which to me is hilarious. And is this the first time you're doing the sweater party, or is this a new thing? Or have you been doing it for the past few years?
Yeah, we've been doing it for the past few years. It kind of developed because, you know, the audience members start showing up in really unusual sweaters during this time of year. And there were always, you know, pictures of funny ones going viral. And then we started wearing them occasionally. And we just leaned into it where we had the whole audience wearing them. And then now the hosts change every single segment. And it's become one of our big holiday specials. This year, we actually have the Rockettes on this show. And, you know, and Elizabeth Banks is going to get into it and wear a sweater. And it's just a lot of fun. We give money away to the winner of the contest. And it's one of our favorite shows.
Well, I tell you, one of the things the show, I've been watching it for years, one of the things you do that is really special is you really engage with the audience in interesting ways so that they're not just sitting there as responders to what's going on. Did that evolve over time? Because I've worked on TV shows as well, and I find the best stuff comes organically where you don't really plan it. It just sort of comes out of a natural set of events or occurrences.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, we don't have writers, so we try to use the, you know, organic comedy and set up situations that, you know, will be funny and react to things that are really going on. And the audience has always been a huge part of the show. And it really kind of started, you know, with Regis. Like when we first started the show, you know, all those years ago as a local show, you know, Regis came back to the New York area. And we had a live audience for the first time, and it was tough to get an audience. No one knew who we were. The show wasn't seen. And he would make a point of, like, shaking hands and really interacting with each audience member until more and more would come back every day. And, you know, to this day, you know, we have one of these audiences. Many daytime shows can't even get enough people every day. And oftentimes there's a year wait for tickets because people have been, you know, lining up for so long to want to be part of the show. But we really engineered the whole studio to be close to the audience. So it's not like many shows, like where you're in a huge theater and the host is, mm-hmm. you know, 50 feet away and kind of ignores them, you know, has the band play loud, you know, in the breaks so they don't have to talk to them. We're in the audience interacting and it brings all kinds of, you know, as you said, organic interaction that really turns out to be fun. And since our whole emphasis is on reality and the people at home and just kind of humanity, it's a way that you can, you know, get into that while all these people are at home watching and can't have that interaction. They can relate to the people right there, sitting there, you know, that are regular people and they're interacting with our hosts and different celebrities.
Yeah, I mean, it really comes through. And the thing you said about Regis, I worked on a couple of shows that he was on, and during the commercial break, he was always great because he'd engage the studio audience and banter, chit chat, and how are you, sir? You know, and he just start like, and it was so endearing because you always got the sense with him, and the same with Kelly and Mark, that he really he really did like talking to people. Like, you know, some people have those jobs and it's like they can put on a brave face when the camera's on, but they're really not people persons, if you will. But he was always engaging, and I thought all of that carries through. I think in the vibe of the show and carries through to the people watching at home. I do think there's a sort of ephemeral energy that exists in a show taping that does come through. And I just in being around him on set and seeing how he interacted with people and knowing what I know of Kelly a bit, that it really comes through on camera.
Right. So yeah, I really learned that from him and always tried to, you know, even do it myself because I'm not the most sociable guy. And, you know, when we hired Kelly, she was, you know, such a, you know, an energy and a such a spitfire. And she learned that also and really took to it so well. And she's in the audience every single break. And Mark, too. I don't know that was his first, you know, that would have been his first instinct is to, you know, be walking up there and interacting with people. But he's gotten into it, too. And they're, you know, wishing happy birthday and taking selfies and signing books and signing mugs and kibitzing with the audience, during every break. And it makes them happy, but it also as an entertainer, it keeps you sharp and it keeps your energy up. It's almost like a comedian who interacts with the audience and just kind of, you know, ad libs through, you know, talking to people and then just comes up with material, you know, on the fly. And it really does work.
Yeah. I mean, that's something I love to do as a comedian myself. And because it was always unnatural for me to go on. It's like going into a cocktail party and then immediately launching into jokes. You know, when I walk into a room, whether it's a TV set or a stand-up comedy club or a theater, there's all these people sitting there and it always seemed unnatural to me to just launch into jokes. It felt more natural to just start with a conversation and then see where that goes. And it's wonderful because people will really open up if they know that you're not making fun of them. You're just interested in what they have to say. And I got to tell you, I think you've had one of the hardest jobs as an executive producer in television because you've had so many hosts, right? You've had a few different hosts, co-hosts. And I was curious how you've had to adjust in your role to be able to work so seamlessly with different personalities.
Right. Well, you know, it makes it definitely harder to switch up the show, but it also really is energizing and exciting because, you know, I don't know that I would have been around this long if it was just the same host. At some point, even though the show changes every day and it's so exciting, it's the same show to an extent, but every time there's a new host, it brings a new energy. And I've always said and emphasized to my staff that, you know, we're producing for the host, you know, and every host is different to their strengths, you know, to what they do best. And even though in one sense, the format has stayed the same and, you know, the emphasis on kind of light entertainment and comedy and pop culture and family has all stayed the same. At the same time, with each host, they're so different that, you know, we get to frame it in a different way and you know, emphasize their strengths and try to keep away from, you know, their weaknesses. And it really has worked. And so it's tough to kind of figure out like what is going to work for this new person. But that's one of the reasons we hire these people, because we realize that they have these skills and something special. And of course, the chemistry is so key too, obviously, between the two hosts and making sure we produce to that end game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you had said about Kelly, I was reading an article, an interview you did with Variety. She's very relatable, but in an aspirational way. She feels like she's the girl next door, but also your friend from across the street that doesn't usually have the same personality as Kelly. And I think that's right. But when you say in an aspirational way, what do you mean by that? Because I agree, she's so relatable.
Yeah, I have lots of friends and lots of neighbors who I like, but they're not as funny as Kelly, and they're not as good looking as Kelly, right. And they can't dance like Kelly, and they're not as quick as Kelly. So that's the aspiration part. Like, you know, it's like your neighbor, you know, on steroids. I mean, she's more than the average person. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I'm saying. Like, we see is like, wow, you know, you could be my friend, but you're a lot funnier than my friend. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. You had also said that we were sort of the first of the reality shows, even though we're a talk show, it wasn't really common for people to be talking about their lives on camera. And it's so funny because I think because I'm so used to it and we're all so used to people living out their lives on camera and on social media, but you're right. Like 20 years ago or whatever it was, like people were not really revealing that much about themselves. And I never looked at it that way, but you're right. In a way it was one of the first reality shows.
Yeah. I mean, look, when you go back to Carson, who, you know, I loved and you know, was a legend, he kept it very close to the vest, and you didn't really know anything about him that it wasn't, you know, in a tabloid. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't that he mm-hmm. was, you know, talking about and, you know, and unveiling his family and, you know, telling stories that were that personal. But Regis really did that, and he would, you know, tell a million stories, and a lot of them were very self-deprecating about what was going on in his life. And he was such a great storyteller that, you know, it really worked, and you were just mesmerized. People loved to, and got sucked into hearing about it. And then, you know, with Kathy Lee, you know, we started, you know, we're a family show in daytime. A lot of, you know, our audience are women at home who are having babies. And when she started, you know, having her kids, I mean, we leaned into that in such a way, you know, her kids became, you know, national celebrities, because we were talking about that kind of stuff and really enjoying and leaning into her pregnancies and child raising, and with Regis too, on every level. And so, you know, when Kelly came on, she got that, and everyone knows her family and my family, you know, on our, you know, holiday show and then a holiday week, you know, they're all coming on and baking cookies and, you know, and going to be on that final Christmas show. And people relate to it in a way that, you know, they don't other shows where they're not breaking down that, you know, fourth wall.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you guys do a terrific job. It's my favorite show to watch because I just feel like, Who's Kelly and Mark now is ever, you just feel like they're friends. And in the morning, you especially want that. Well, Michael, congratulations on the show. It's really well done. And it's a big tribute to you, to the consistency and the quality of it sits in your lap along with the host. Got two fun holiday shows coming up, December 15th, Holiday Christmas Sweater Party and Lives Holiday Party on December 22nd. Michael Gelman, great to have you on.
Thanks, Paul. Good talking to you.
All right, there you go. That's Michael Gelman. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope to see you guys on the road December 29th, Orlando, Dr. Phillips Center for the Performing Arts. Permission to Speak is the show, and also going to be doing it February 2nd in Sellersville, Pennsylvania, March 9th, United Theater. We got shows in Milwaukee coming up and Tarrytown, New York, and Phoenix, and all over, people. I'm hitting the road. Permission to Speak. Clips of it on my website. And as always, thank you so much for checking out the podcast and being fans.